So the question, what can the grid do for me? This is one thing that I kept, the question that I kept facing from a number of people when I got, when I started getting involved with the grid project. And we kept thinking of, we kept coming up with some technology solutions, but then we kept coming up with this question from the public health folks. But what can it actually do for me? What the public health epidemiologists were like, what can it do for me? How can it make my life easy? Yes, you can talk about technology. Technology is there, but how can it make my life easy? So I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors in this. I have Peggy Whitty and John Sten, who played an instrumental role in this project, putting it together. The whole idea, like I said, was we have to show to the end users what is it that we're doing that can make life easy for them. So a little bit of outline, what I'll talk about, the objectives, methods, what we came out with, the results, and the discussion. And just a background, just making sure we're all on the same page. Has anybody not seen this diagram, this graphic before? Anybody in the room who has not seen this? One only. So the others are more or less a little bit familiar with this diagram. One for that person who is not. This is a model, architectural model for the public health grid, which has been around for the last couple of years. And the main thing that you see in this, the take-home message from this, is that there's nobody in the center. There's nobody controlling anybody else. So it's a federated system of distributed data sources and distributed resources, and it's based on the public health needs, that the data that public health needs for its functions and the resources are all distributed around the country. In this perspective, around the country, since this is the U.S. public health grid architecture. So the main take home, there's nobody in the center, and all the institutions can be a part of the grid and will be sharing services and resources and data. So most of my presentation will be based on the assumption that you all have gone through a number of different grids-related sessions. If you're here on the last day of the conference, sitting through another grid session, you probably have some idea of the grid. But if in between you think I use a term that you're not familiar with, just let me know and we'll explain. But underlying assumption is that it's an intermediate level for folks, some folks. So the objectives, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, was one, to for us to study the public health end users' information processing, access, and exchange requirements, us meaning the people working with the public health grid project. The other was to demonstrate to the end users the public health utility of the grid proof of concept projects. Since this initiative started as a public health research grid initiative, so there were proof of concept projects at the time that we were doing this project. And the last one, which can be at the top, the first one also, was to demonstrate the relevance of PH Grid proof of concept projects to national priorities. So these are in no way in lined up in terms of priority. They're all almost at the same level in terms of priority. We have to make sure that our projects are in line with the national priorities, and we have to make sure that we understand the end user's requirements and to demonstrate to them what is it that our projects are doing that makes life easier for them. So what we did in this project, which was done around, just started around Finn last year, we studied a number of different regulations, and we selected the ONC, which is the Office of the National Coordinator, AHIC use case, which is American Health Information Community use case for public health case reporting. And we decided to base that, base our work and all that, our project on that use case. That one had some elements of healthcare, so we extracted the public health related steps and put those together in one document, and an abstract of that document is shown in the screenshot here, which I'm not, okay, there's the laser. So it just shows the codes and the brief description. As you can see, the code as event may receive initial notification and the public health scenarios there. Then we developed a real-world public health practice scenario based on the current practice and desired functionality of a county epidemiologist. So based on all the this donut diagram that you're seeing, which has been developed by CDC, not part of our project, I've just used it as to signify that we wanted to make sure that all these functions, the public health functions, are reflected in the scenario that we put together. And Peggy Whitty, who's a county, who was in Dallas County at that time, and now she's in Collins County, Texas, she was a deputy county epidemiologist, and she helped us with developing this real-world public health practice scenario. What she did was I helped her start on sort of putting together a documentation of a day in the life of a deputy county epidemiologist. So she started talking about, she comes to her desk in the morning and she starts building a database of cheese heroin morbidity and mortality. I don't want you to go, it's really not meant to read the whole thing, and I'm not going to read it, but the whole point is these were the highlights of one day in a life of a county epidemiologist. And the material that is highlighted in blue are different data sources that she needs to access for all the work that she's doing, for all the activities. So she said one fine day she comes to the office and she just has that as a first task that she has to run and do an essence run and get, the next step is get data from the poison center, all for the cheese heroin morbidity and mortality. And this was going around at the time of last year's Salmonella outbreak. So what she was trying to portray was that she comes to the office with a sort of a regular task in mind, and then somewhere down the day, along the day, she gets notice about some Salmonella cases in her county and in neighboring counties. So how her day evolves is just how the tasks get sort of pushed onto her plate, and then she has to go, as you can see, the blue fonted material shows all the data sources that she has to access. And you can imagine these are all different data sources. She has to run an essence analysis run. She has to get data from Poison Center, all these disparate websites, and then she has to contact the medical examiner's office, which has to be done by the office. She has to check EpiX, that is, she has to go into her email and or go through web direct to the URL and do. So there are all different systems, all different ways of getting data that she needs for her work. And some of the data she needs to get from one source and enter into another, but she just has to enter either manually or write it somewhere or hear it and then type it. So I've just enlisted those data sources that I had highlighted earlier, the Essence, Poison Control, and Medical Examiner's Office. And going down the list, you can see at some point she had to actually talk to the grandmother. Unfortunately, we don't have a way of digitizing or electronifying that, but she just has to call the grandmother on the phone. But that's part of data sources. So coming back to our step where we had that public health scenario, we took that scenario, the day in the life of an epidemiologist, and mapped it to the original abstracted public health case reporting use case. So the next slide, I'll just show the same side by side. On the right side is the public health scenario, and on the right, and this side is a AHIC use case, abstracts of the AHIC use case, and we mapped these to these. So the first one was trying to build a database of cheese heroin morbidity and mortality, and we mapped it to the code 8.111. I'm sure everybody remembers exactly which code I'm talking about. And it was the alternate action request information by utilizing information exchanges. So in her scenario, she had only this line, and then I went ahead and sort of developed a template for getting some more information about that particular task, and the template was, so who does she contact for that information, what action does she really take, what is she looking for, when, how long does it take her, how long does it take her in her current practice, how is it done, where does she get the data, what issues she's facing, does she have any wish list? So, like, she's facing some problem, and she's like, oh, I wish there was something like this. I wish there was something like this that will help make my life easy. So remember, she's going through the scenario depicts what she's going through right now without having an integrated system of work. So she has to access all data from different sources. So she will be coming across issues, and she will have these wish lists. Oh, I just wish this was there. So we want to capture those wishes and try to see how we can best address those. And then the next step was we mapped those functions, the activities that she was conducting, with our ongoing proof of concept projects. This is an architectural diagram of the public health grid, and I'm not going into details of this one. A lot of other presentations you must have gone through have talked about these. But at some point, if you have some question, you've got the grid architects here, and we can handle those questions. So when we started mapping those, the list of the tasks that an epidemiologist has to do with our proof of concept projects, I looked at the active projects we had, and this is a screenshot of our wiki, which is on the web, and some of you may have accessed it. And then we have a list of the services that we already have up there, and we were trying to map these, the current projects and services we have, to the epidemiologist workflow. And then some more, some of those services that were shown in the last stack, just a little more detail of those, again, from our wiki. And then we selected a number of the consecutive public health business processes. Remember I showed you that long list starting from cheese, heroin, database development? And you go down the list. We obviously don't have projects that relate to each step because we have very limited resources as of yet. So we selected a couple of projects which were in line with a couple of these consecutive steps. So I found these, the first two, building a database using conducting an essence run and trying to get data from Poison Center. So we have projects which related to these. And I'll show how these are related. This is just a breakdown of the same thing that I alluded to a little earlier. We wanted to get at each step, that each of these two steps, we wanted to get more information about how that data is in, the mode of attempting to access the data, where she gets that data from, issues, wish list, and a project, who is doing it, and actions. So one of the first one that I showed, going back to building a database of cheese heroin morbidity and mortality, conducting an essence run. This we were able to map to one of the biosurveillance use case projects. And as you can see, what I didn't point out to earlier was this was a proof of concept that we were conducting. The project was leveraging the grid technology to enhance local biosurveillance capacity using rods. So even though she was accessing essence, we were not working with essence at that time, but we had a proof of concept based on rods. And the idea was rods, if who's not familiar with rods? Real-time outbreak detection syndromic surveillance system. And what it does is it has about 20 installations around the country. It's a free open source software based out of University of Pennsylvania, if I'm correct, University of Pennsylvania? Pittsburgh, sorry. Didn't do my homework well. University of Pittsburgh. And what they've done is, so these are different installations. What people can do is they download the software and they can have their own installation in at a state level or at a regional level. But those those 20 installations had no connection to each other. They were all separate. So those people, the administrators, could call or email the other installation sites and ask for some data if they wanted to compare something, but they were not connected. So our project, what we did in collaboration with the University of Edinburgh, was to develop a RADSA die project, and we have developers here sitting who were instrumental in this project. Any questions, I'll happily deflect towards them and there. And the result was we were able to extend RADS with using the Globus toolkit, which is the grid middleware, which allows the ability to query across installations and visualize data from disparate secured nodes. So earlier, just imagine there were 20 installations all over the country, and they were not sharing data. If you needed to get data from one or the other and wanted to compare, you had to ask them separately. But when we developed a RADSA die system, we were able to query across the installations. So we were able to query, for example, installation A and B, and the results we got were we could compare those results. So moving on, the next system, the next step was to get data from poison control system, or poison control center. So one of our projects that we were doing at that time, and we're still doing at that time, it was called Poi Kwan Dai, because it was tied to the AGSA Dai framework. Now we call it the Quicksilver, and that's what I'm going to show next. So it is, the use case behind it is that there are 61 poison centers across the U.S., and they get calls whenever you have, when you're suspecting a poison case or you need information about any poison thing, you call those, and that information is gathered across these poison control centers. They have data coming from these centers to their own database in one center, but we, CDC, used to have problems. We had challenges getting that data from them. So when we talked about this service with them and asked them if they can put a web service around that data and expose the data elements that they feel best sharing about, we could just query them when we need instead of they shipping their data to us. So that worked well, and they agreed to share aggregate data, outbreaks of foodborne diseases and other illnesses that can potentially be identified faster through the current system. And what we do is, I know it's a little too small to see. Let me go back a little bit. So what you could do is you can select the date, and you can select the area, and then submit, and you get a result based, and you can see different color codes showing green is between 1 and 5 calls, yellow is between 6 and 20, and red is more than 20 calls. Another way to visualize this is you see these balloons, and then you click on them, you can get more, you can get the epi curve. So just wrapping up, this project was basically meant to address those three objectives. One, we wanted to make sure that our projects are addressing all the national priorities. We wanted to make sure that we understand the user requirements and that whatever we are doing, the users understand how it really fits in their life, in their lifestyle, and it makes their life a little easier. And we're definitely trying our best to make sure that we add value and we provide benefits to the public health practice, and we keep ourselves aligned, our projects aligned to national priorities. Thank you. Acknowledgements to tons of folks.
Okay. Any questions for Muzna about her presentation?
Not sure I understand. So you said what you understand is that this is grid computing and the other is data grid? Right, but I think the way I understand is that in my mind there's no separation between data grid and computing grid. So yes, those are different use cases, but those don't have to be separate grids. So one same architecture can address computational challenges as well as data sharing. So what I showed you were using those disparate data sources, and this was sort of data grid, but this is not as similar to the data grids that are being used in high-performance computing, because in those, the data sets are massive. And here we are only doing aggregate data counts. So these are lightweight data. This, what I showed was lightweight data grid. But at the same time, this is sharing resources, because when you consider data as a resource in generic terms, so that's sharing resources. But we have other use cases, proof of concepts, which our projects have, we've had other presentations about those projects, which actually do computation. And we had, we had data in node A, node B, and we were data node C, and we ran an analytical service on data A and data set B, and got back, it was a SAS. Brian, do you want to take that?
Okay.
Okay, so we were able to run that analytical service on the data which is residing on A and B, and we were at C. So that's like computational grid, but still it is much lower weight than which is being done in cancer and other research. It is definitely lower weight, but it's a combination.
So there's a fundamental difference, that one is the data groups that you're talking about, and I'm familiar with a lot of them because I've worked with most of them.
State of
school. Oh, okay, sorry. So there are two aspects to the question. One is, I mean, the problem that they are trying to solve is fundamentally system integration problem, data integration. It's not a high-performance data analysis per se, not right now anyway. But data grids are traditionally defined as, say, for example, if you have high-energy physics generating the Large Hadron Collider generating terabytes of data every day, and data grids traditionally address to solve how do you take this data that is being generated at one center and distribute them across all over the world and do some distributed analysis by leveraging resources that are being shared by all these centers of all around the world. And that is a problem that Open Science Grid, the data grid, and they're trying to solve. But here, the problem is, the data that is being transferred is of a scale much lower than the terabytes.
At this point. Right, that's
right.
Why you're asking.
Right, right. And there's
because down the line, if you envision, I mean, it will be a massive amount of data.
Right. And
so definitely the onset of data grid also come into the picture.
Right, and it's organically supposed to grow by leveraging the same concepts of grid computing that Globus supports. It's supposed to organically grow to that. When it grows to the terabyte a day problem, then there are tools that are already in Globus that could be leveraged, and it won't look any different from the way it is at least for the end users, but may not be for the infrastructure providers.
Thanks, Lou.
Brian, and then.
Yeah, actually, Robin, of course, said like 90% of what I was going to say much better than I was. One of the big differences of like the RADZADAI and the GMDS was that with large data grids, you typically have a mirrored physical data structure.
Yeah.
But what we're dealing with here is a heterogeneous data structure. You have each source. But in this use case, you have heterogeneous data structures which you're getting joined together. And that's really one of the key takeaways is you have these different databases physically. So it's not just a matter of giant data problems.
Yep.
It's a matter of mapping those to a common service model and showing it on one map where the pins actually mean something. And that's what we were dealing with this project, was the heterogeneous data structures and getting a common view.
Comment, question?
Yeah, the question is, from the informatics point of view, can you tell a couple of words about what is the difference between the health informatics grid and the CA grid? So are you using like infrastructural parts like the guards, or you're using more like application like this clinical trial stuff? And what is the delta? What is the difference? What are you adding to it?
Brian, I'll let Brian handle that question, our grid architect.
I think if you look at all the technical components of the grid, you'll see like 99% is CA grid and Globus. I mean, really the only different pieces that we built were the service pieces that are specific to public health. Mm-hmm. So one of the nice things that, actually the only reason PH Grid exists, because CA Grid existed beforehand, Globus existed beforehand, plus all the other open source pieces. So really it's more of, I think Ken Hall said this yesterday, with Tom Savelle, of how they sort of, it's a branding of, these are the public health components that were built on top of it. Because otherwise, it's Globus, it's the CA grid components, even some of the services that existed, which are adapted for public health.
Just one add on to that. I think what Moody's had did a good job of explaining in this scenario is explaining that the CA grid and Globus services, which are a tremendously powerful stack, still need to be tailored, and there still need to be services tailored. And it's upon us in the PH Grid program to understand the domain of the epidemiologist, not the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Mayor.
Thank you. Last question.
Very much enjoyed the overview of the assessment. As you did it very much from the workflow analysis of the particular epidemiologist, the public health worker.
Mm-hmm.
Data up or pulls this data down.
Mm-hmm.
But looking
where they have to. I think the one about, because in the same day, she later realizes that my mom said that it was the same time when Salmonella outbreak was that going on last year. So if I'm understanding you correctly, so at some point when she collects enough data about cases in her own county, then she has to let others know, similar to the fact that she was asking others about what's happening in their county, and then she has to let others know also. So is that what you were referring to? Yes, there was definitely that.
I think there's no automatic way of pushing the information.
Not right now.
Right now, I think Grid as a technology stack provides you with a way to get notified on interesting topics, right? So there is a way to subscribe to an information feed from a particular data source, right? If something happens, let me know or send me an email. But I mean, as a technology, available, but how integrated it with the daily workflow of a criminologist
is
still
a
working.
No, we didn't go into that much detail, but we can. I think we'll have to come back again to the discussion. So we'll
our quick.
Okay, we'll have an open discussion at the end also.
Yeah, exactly.